Peace to the saints. Today we are talking about business, and you'll have to forgive me. There was no turnaround except that I could take a bio break, but here we are back after it. And this is one of my favorite segments. We're talking about building a financial foundation, providing for your future and your family's future. This is something that I know well, and we're not only going to give you clues as to how to create a strong business, but also clues on how to enjoy the process. That's one of the greatest challenges that I had when I was on my come up, was enjoying the process, because the process is littered with uncertainty, doubt, financial woes, and much else. And you forget, I'm in America. I'm in a developed country. I have every safety net possible, whether it's my family or the state, that is the government. So let's go ahead and talk about it. As I said, I didn't get to prepare my notes as I would like, but there are a number of things on my mind, and I have a couple reminders over here that I will utilize. One thing I would like to let everyone know is that if you are privileged enough, and if I end up doing it, over the next week, we're going through the Book of Dark Truth Summit, and we're polishing the slides that were used during the presentation. And we're also getting the best of the video footage that was captured, and we're going to release that to the persons who pay to attend the summit in person. For those of you who did not attend the summit, I may or may not make it available to you. Maybe not all of it. It depends, because as I said, there were some very sensitive topics covered. But there was one particular lecture that I think is hugely important for anyone who would go into business or consider themselves a business person. And the reason that lecture is so important is because it talked about the realities, the truth of how you take a business from ground zero all the way through success. You know, a lot of people leave out the truth when they're telling their come up story, because they want you to feel like they want to tell this story of, I came from rags to riches. But if you check into Gary Vaynerchuk, you see, like, you didn't come from rags to riches. You came from riches to riches. Or even in Donald Trump, you came from riches to riches. Now, granted, there's a major difference between 100 million and a billion, but there's very few people who can talk about rags to riches. And if you're actually starting at the ground floor, understanding how to actually leverage the limited resources you may feel you have, that's a different story. And that does take a different level of ruthlessness. I'm not going to lie to you. And for that reason, we have that session in the Book of Dark Truths. Now, what I want to talk about to you is a number of things. So first off, we're in the era of a distraction. So people are doing side hustles. They're in the gig economy. And as a part of the gig economy, they have a significant number of jobs and obligations, which means that they are distracted. What is going to make you wealthy will not be any of those gigs you're doing. It won't be your 9-to-5. It will be a money machine that you create, which could be a service, but more likely is a product. And that product will give you freedom in terms of time, and it will give you capital. Now, you need to be able to think and to be able to work on that product, which means to do that, you have to be able to cut back on expenses, number one. Number two, you should try to minimize the number of things that you're doing outside of that 9-to-5, which is earning you money, minimizing the things that take up your time, take up your ability to have mental space, reduce the number of things that stress you out. The idea of, okay, I have a job and then I have a side hustle, I have a number of gigs, that's going to ruin you. What you need is time. But before you need time, what you actually need is experience. So let me tell you this first. If you've never had experience in a startup company, in a new company, you should go get that. Why? Because it is priceless, free training. Because when you're in a young, early stage company, no matter what title you're hired under, inevitably, you're going to be invited into doing different forms of work. And a lazy person who has no vision, they're going to say, oh, that's not within my job title. A person with ambition is able to realize, okay, that's not within my job title, but I'd never get hired to do that in any other company. So I'm going to do it and learn the skill set. Important. Also, you're a little bit closer to product development. You're certainly closer to executive leadership and management. There's much to learn, and you get to see how all of these structures interact with one another. Let me give you guys a cheat code for getting things done, especially if you have a partner or a collaborator. I'm going to do that shortly. May I first acknowledge the, I think it's one person or two persons who have supported. Actually, it's one person. Shout out to Mr. That might be a woman. That looks like that's a woman. Shout out to Miss Liu, supporting the work. Appreciate it. Writes peace to the saints. This may be a quick one. I folks don't support. These I do for your benefit. I'm actually, you know, pretty well established, admittedly. So number one, and if you have a company or a startup or an idea that you're working on, the smartest thing you can do is get some help. Whether it's unpaid or paid help, it's your wife, your mother, your little brother, your cousin, whoever's helping you, that's a good thing for you. And if it's paid help, fantastic. Obviously, unpaid is generally better, but you usually get what you paid for. The most important thing you can do is train them well. When you train someone well, it reduces the number of issues you're going to have later in the life of the company or in your experience with this person executing on their duties, all of which should lead to profit. The chief question that I always ask myself in business is, how much money does that make? The worst thing you're going to experience is being open. Marquette, you don't want to be open? No, you don't. Everyone has ideas. Most of them are dumb and hard to implement. They require money and time, and they don't even lead to any profit. So you need to make this a mantra in your startup. Someone says, oh, hey, why don't we do this? Why don't we try that? Ask them, how much money does that make me? Feel free to say me, because at the end of the day, it's you who's taking the financial risk. They have to know when they want to pull something out, they're pulling that pound of flesh out of your body. When they get paid, you're pulling it out of your mouth to give to them. Huh? How much money does that make me? That's the number one golden question to ask the people that are working with you and collaborating with you. Number two, and this is to make them effective in getting across the finish line. And this is an experience that I had this morning with one of my collaborators, and I'm going to share this with him. It's one of the things that inspired me. This morning, he said, hey, Mr. Burton, here's a list of things that you need to do and, you know, across different businesses that you're running, different activities you're engaged in. Here's all the things you need to do. Now, granted, I do like to take the bird's eye view, you know, go through the list, see all the things. If there's anything glaring that's hugely important or hugely profitable, which is the same thing, I want to get on that first. There's a number of things on the list that they have moral force behind them, but no dollars. Like, for example, he said, oh, you know, this thing is 2 months overdue. You said you would do this 2 months ago.
Tune stood up, $19.99. PTTS taking notes. Thank you for sharing your knowledge.
Absolutely. And if we have any moderators on, if they could share the Cash App and the PayPal so people can send in their questions using those methods as well. But he said, you know, there's 2 months ago you agreed to do this thing. Now, mind you, I agreed because I'm kind-hearted. Now, the difference between being in business or just being successful in business versus having like clout or popularity is if you're running a tech company, even if it's a successful multi-million dollar tech company, no one's really bothering you, right? Like you don't have fan mail. You don't have people making significant demands of your time who are not in your company or in your family or your friend group. You know, the challenge with clout or fame is that now you have people like flooding your inbox, right? So it just makes things a little bit harder. And in my case, I agreed to do something 2 months ago, which I fully intend to do, and doesn't make me a penny. It's just out of my, you know, kindness. And usually that's why people who are wealthy, they use their money to be kind. They use philanthropy, the philanthropic dollar, because they don't have time. They're limited on that. He said, hey, you agreed to do this 2 months ago and you should probably get this done. It's been 2 months. And then I looked at the list. I said, how much does that pay? Nothing at all. Okay, cool. So you get paid, right? You get paid to be here. Okay, fantastic. So your chief goal needs to be making sure that this ship stays afloat. You should focus me and everyone within the company on doing activities that pay. So you, if you're going to assist me, when you reshuffle that list, you reshuffle those things that don't pay toward the end, toward the bottom. If we get to them, we get to them. And let me tell you guys something about the ethics of a businessman versus the morality of a man or an employee or a peon. A businessman realizes that there's always going to be a list of things I don't get around to or I can't do, I don't have time to do. There will be things that remain undone and unfinished. I have to be comfortable with that, but never allow the things that are truly profitable and will advance my business to remain undone. You have to prioritize. Now understand this. So that thing that he had mentioned hadn't been done for 2 months, might be another 2 months. Put it at the end of the list. What's going to make us money today? What's going to open up things for the long term of this business? That was number one. Here's another thing. So once he showed me the list, I looked at the list. Then he mentioned this thing that doesn't make any money, which is fine. And that's due to my lack of training. That's due to me not training, right? Now, here's another thing. This is why I'm talking to you all, because I want to train him and also share something with you guys at the same time. So I said, what's the most important thing to get done? He says, these two things. So he tells me what the two things are. And I look at him. Those two things are important. And there was two challenges that occurred. Number one is that I tried to do both of the things, kind of going back and forth and in parallel, and then I didn't get either one done before my first meeting of the day. So I had the time to maybe get one of those things done. I tried to do both. I got neither of them done. What that teaches you is this. Remember, if you're going to be successful, you're going to be successful for your ability to manage people, including yourself. Boss University, I recommend it to everyone because it teaches you first to manage the self. If you can't manage the self, you can't do much. But as a boss, you have to be able to manage the self and manage others. So here's the first thing. Number one, we have the psychopath back in here. This is crazy. Give me a second. Let me block him. Okay, there we go. Anyways, so if you can't manage the self, you can't manage others either. If you can manage others, you have an infinite access to you have a superpower. Because if you can manage 10 people, if you can influence 10 people, you have the strength of 10 men. So this is what happened. And this is due to my lack of training of the young man. So he says, these are your two tasks. And me, I try to complete these two tasks before my first meeting of the day. I don't complete either of them. So there's two breakdowns. Number one, when you're managing people, sometimes you might have a boss.
Ronald White stood up. $50. PTTS tuition for the ism.
Appreciate. Shout out to the ballers. Baller alert. When you have someone above you, whether they're older than you or they have more status or they're higher up in the hierarchy of your company or whatever, sometimes we might make incorrect assumptions about that person. And I'm not speaking about myself in particular. I'm speaking generally. This is what I want you to understand. Number one, people who are on top, they're not globally talented. They're not talented and capable across the board. They're usually really, really, really good at like one, two, or three things, really good at those things. They're a superhuman in those areas. In other areas, they're mediocre, they're average. And you have to be able to understand that, and that should impact the way you interact with that individual and the way you extract from them, the way you extract their talents. And usually when you're dealing with persons who are very high performers or they're high up in a hierarchy or they're a specialist, you want to dedicate more of their time to working on their specialty, right? So if you're working with Usher or you're working with a great songwriter, you don't want the songwriter to spend any time learning choreography. And you don't want, you know, the other person who has this particular talent doing things outside of his area of expertise. So that's number one. Make sure that you can limit those things so you can milk the cow out of their best talent. So here's number one. He gave me two tasks that were my tasks that would benefit me. And I wanted to get both of them done. And I failed at both of them simultaneously. Well, what would have been the better thing to do? Well, the better thing is to spoon feed. You, of course, would spoon feed a dumb person because they're not very bright. They can't handle very much. But here's the magic, I guess the secret. You also spoon feed intelligent people because they too are human, especially males. Females can handle multiple things at once. Males are not very good at that. You might have someone who's productive and efficient, but you give them one thing at a time, and once they complete it, then you give them the next thing. Because in fact, no one can work on two things at once. So there's no logic to giving them two things except that you would put a more of a psychological burden on them and make it more likely that they can fail at more things at the same time. So anyways, I failed at completing both of those tasks, and then I went into my meeting, and then my day was booked with meetings, and then I did three live sessions and still haven't completed those two tasks. So number one thing is in the morning, let me know what the full scope of tasks are so that we can both agree on what's the most important thing and what's the most important thing in business, the thing that makes you the most money. And there's two ways to categorize that, depending on your financial context and the financial context of the business. It's either A, what's the quickest dollar? How do I get the money in the door the fastest? Or B, what's the biggest dollar? Might take 2 months, but you know, we can close a $100,000 contract. Let's work on that now. Sometimes you can't pursue the 2 month, $100,000 contract because you don't have enough runway. You're going to run out of money before that, and you're going to go out of business before that. So then you realize that it's about the quickest dollar. Let's work on the quickest dollar. You have to know that in advance. So major lesson, number one, always take the bird's eye view, figure out what's everything that's on the list. Reshuffle the list so that it's in order of what's most important, whether it's what's the quickest dollar or what's the biggest dollar. Always keeping an eye to the long term of your business, because you're not going to die tomorrow. Then once you get that done, figure out what's the most immediate next task to do. Once we've defined that, and that should be a task that pays, figure out who has the unique expertise or talent to excel at this task and get it done. Your most talented people whose skills and abilities can bring profit, you should make them use those skills and abilities and not have them do anything else. Okay. Now we understand that. I'll go ahead and take a pause for the cause, take some questions, comments before I carry on. Shout out to Rodney. He writes, hilarious saint. I'm the one who grabs the towels and tissues from the hotel as well. Bro, I'm trying to tell you. I'm embracing the thrifty lifestyle even though I'm not short on cash. Thank you. And that's the most important thing you can do. And I tell you what, it'll teach you a lot about a woman. When you're around a woman and she's not also trying to save money, you're going to suffer because she will never know what you are holding or what you are not holding financially. And if you take the Book of Dark Truths Summit, I highly recommend you get this information. It'll tell you how to manage that. That's a very delicate thing. And a lot of what you hear popularly is foolish and will lead you to destruction. But the fact is, it's very easy to spend money and also be unaware of what it costs. For example, if I take a woman out on a date in Las Vegas, say I go pick her up in my car. So I go pick her up and then we're going to go and watch a boxing match. So then we drive to the venue, we valet. I don't receive a bill at that moment. She doesn't see a bill. So we valet. Okay, great. It's during an event. Okay. So then we go to the event. I bought the tickets. She doesn't know what the tickets cost. So then we go into the event. We got great seats. She's happy. We get some, you know, snacks from the concessions. She doesn't see what they cost because I go retrieve the snacks, right? So she doesn't know that that's a $13 bottle of water and that's a, you know, $18, you know, beef frank that you're eating. No clue. Okay, great. So then after that, we leave. And because the strip is super crowded and it's hard to get in and out, we're going to stay on the strip, stay in a suite. It's an event night, got a nice suite. She doesn't know what that costs per night. And you know what? Because that's not her lifestyle, she's not even able to estimate. So we've already spent $2,000. What? Marquette, you spent $2,000? Yeah. Yeah. That's not including the boxing tickets, though. That's just between the valeting, the food, and the suite for the night. That's $2,000 already. Then the boxing tickets were $3,000 a piece because of the seats. Okay, we're creeping up on $8,000, right? She has not the foggiest idea of that being $8,000 because she's never valeted during an event and paid $300 to valet a car. She's never got a suite that is this nice, and she's paying $1,500 for the suite. And she's never sat floor seats ringside at a boxing match. And, you know, okay, there's two chains is three rows ahead of you and Dave Chappelle's five rows ahead of you. She has no conception of the fact that these are $3,000 a ticket per person, right? So her ignorance of those things, when she wants to keep going out to eat regularly, she doesn't realize there has to be a balance. You also have to have time to work. So being mindful of the pennies is very important. I'm not saying you need to stress the woman out and tell her how much everything costs, but I'm saying you have to tell yourself, okay, Marquette, if I'm going to go out and spend $8,000 on one night, then at some point I'm going to have to be thrifty, right? Because you cannot live at that rate and not go broke. It is much easier to spend money than it is to make money. It's much easier to destroy than it is to build. Anyone can destroy a building. Doesn't take any knowledge, but it takes a freaking architect to know how to create a building. And that takes knowledge and skills and time. You can destroy a building in one day. might take you many months to build something. You always have to take that kind of mindset. Gentleman writes, where can I purchase the Dark Truth Summit? It is actually currently not for sale. I still haven't decided if I'm going to make it for sale. Keep an eye out. Within a week, the people who attended in person, they will have access to it. If I do make it for sale, I'm not going to guarantee that it's going to have 100% of what was done in person. I'll let you know if there is, in fact, anything missing. Anyways, carrying on. Let me see what other comments, questions people had. Yeah, so I highly encourage being thrifty. And if you ever feel embarrassed about being thrifty, you're not a good businessman. Because when you're running a business, I sometimes hear people say stupid things like, oh, that's a tax write-off. Or, oh, you know, like I charged it to my business. Like, bro, like that doesn't make it okay because it's a tax write-off. That doesn't make it okay to endure unnecessary expenses because the business paid for it. You're showing me you're not a careful person. You're showing me you're a person that doesn't pay attention to pennies. That's what you're showing me. And more importantly, when you take that attitude, your employees will follow up on that attitude. It is a bad attitude. And if you're ever embarrassed of being thrifty, that's a deep insecurity that you need to fix. You should never be scared of someone thinking that you're poor. I never get embarrassed about someone thinking that I don't have a bunch of money. I don't care what they think. I'm going to take the towels and take the toilet paper from this hotel suite. I'm going to go hop in my Maybach or go hop in my Rolls Royce and drive off. I don't care what those people think about me. They don't know what I drive and I don't care. They don't know where I live and I don't care. They don't know what kind of house I have. I don't care. They might just be thinking this guy is broke and he's just living the high life for a night or two. I don't care. Because what you need to be concerned about are the realities of things. And the reality is best understood through the numbers. Now, let me tell you a couple things. So number one, I often talk about negotiation. I did a segment on negotiation during the Book of Dark Truth segment. I did a segment on negotiation during the boot camp that I hosted. The boot camp is available to you. You can purchase the boot camp footage. It's quite cheap. I don't know what it is. Probably less than $100, maybe like 30. I don't remember. I really don't care because I don't need to purchase it. But you can find it at thesassan.com, thesasn.com. The reason negotiation is important is because what you really need to be considering is you're in the business of persuasion, especially the less money you have, the more persuasion you need. The reason that I say that is because when you're starting a company from scratch, you're going to need collaborators, especially if you're creating a complex product such as a software product or maybe even a significant hardware product. You're going to need collaborators, and generally you can't pay them. So you're paying them in hope. You're paying them in dreams. You're paying them in possibilities. If you do not know how to persuade, if you do not know how to negotiate, you are going to lose and you're going to suffer. It's number one. So being able to persuade is critical. Having self-belief and being able to convey that is absolutely important. Then the other piece is negotiation, which is how do I get my outcome? And when you're negotiating, it requires a high level of attentiveness. That's why I always talk about pennies. When I mention pennies, pennies for me is a metaphor for details. There's a young man I had mentioned recently. He's early in business. I don't even know if I can say he's early in business. He's had a number of products that he's created. And so there is he came into a conflict with one of his manufacturers, which will happen. You're going to have conflict in business. You're going to have times you get cheated in business. You're going to have all kinds of things occur in business. And he basically went into a negotiation. When you're going into a negotiation, you need to have the mindset of, I want to get as much for me as I can. Sometimes we're really concerned about the method of things rather than the motivation of things and what's inspiring something and also the mindset. You see, if you're in a boxing match, even though it's a sport and you're engaged in you're not engaged in a war, you're not dealing with someone you hate in real life, but when that bell rings, you need to be filled with whatever emotions will get that other person laid out cold, whether it's hatred, anger, meanness, vitriol, whatever it is, you need to channel that and get that other person laid out. Similarly, negotiation is the same thing. And if you can't negotiate, you're going to lose and you're going to suffer. I was observing a negotiation between the gentleman, and this, I'm going to speak about multiple people at once, between a new business person and very seasoned manufacturers in China. And I noticed that consistently the manufacturers were giving no concessions, whereas the business person was giving many concessions, and consistently the manufacturers were lying. They were lying. They would say something like, my minimum order quantity is 400. You can't order less than 400 pieces. And the new business person, the new entrepreneur, they forgot to say, oh, well, why is that? Why is the minimum quantity 400? Because you said so? Well, what happens if you do 399 units? What happens if you do 398 units? Why is it 400? You see, when you become an entrepreneur, a boss, you need to get out of the employee mode, which is the rule-following mode. And in the negotiation, they were suffering because they were yielding to fake assumptions and fake frames, okay? So that's number one thing. Negotiation is absolutely critical, but it starts with the idea of you being willing to ask questions, to break rules, to also make people not like you, to get people angry, to wait someone out, to take advantage. Generally, when we hear the concept of take advantage, we think of this as a bad thing. Oh, he took advantage of her. We think of it as a bad thing. In business, the exact thing you're trying to do is to take advantage. If you can create an unfair deal that favors you, you should do it every time in business, okay? And remember, the other side of it is always lying, I promise you. And lying is a part of the negotiation process. Just as one thing you might not know is if you're ever being questioned by the police in an interrogation room, they can legally lie to you. That's a part of their toolkit. That's a part of their strategy. The police can lie to you. So you might learn something there. Shout out to EJ. He writes, thank you for these segments, Saint. The kind of lives that make the real life difference. Peace. Please continue, Saint. Sir, yes, sir. I appreciate you. Shout out to Joshua supporting. Good to see him. And I also acknowledge Dylan. He writes, do you have any recommendations on what route to take for creating a website that is a one-stop shop for everything you want to sell, tangible and intangible products, and is relatively simple to customize? Peace to the Saints. Well, the challenge there, Dylan, is that when something starts, it starts very simple. When Google started, it was merely a search bar. That's it. No email. No YouTube, none of the bells and whistles, just simple. It was a search engine, just a bar. You type in your query, you click search. It didn't have all those other things. When Facebook started, it was just a wall, right? You can post on someone's wall. There were no groups. There was no video calling. There were a lot of the bells and whistles of today were not there. There's no Facebook Marketplace, no Facebook dating. You might be like, Facebook dating, was that a thing? Yeah, it was. It came and went. The point is when it starts extraordinarily simple because you have to beat your competitors at something. And so you have to ask yourself, what can I realistically beat others at? What can I do better from a product development or design standpoint? And when you get good at this stuff, you can see the examples really quickly. So for example, I travel a lot and I read a lot. So I always travel with a mobile lamp such as this one, right? This mobile lamp uses a rechargeable battery. You can charge it using a USB-C and it has a rechargeable battery. And then you just click this button here and it'll turn on the light. And it has three settings, which is actually quite standard in the industry to have three settings. So the question is, well, what's wrong with this product? Well, quite a bit is wrong with this product. Number one, it's a mobile light. Why the hell is it so big? That's strike one from a product development standpoint. Number two, it turns out that the moment you put this freaking thing in your suitcase, something is going to hit this and it's going to accidentally turn on your light. It would be much better if you had a switch that you slide to the left or right and it took a couple pounds of force to do so. Otherwise, every time you arrive at your destination and you open up this sucker, it's always discharged. You see, I just closed it and I accidentally turned it on there. That's how poorly designed the light aspect is for this thing. So from a product design standpoint, if I wanted to redesign this, if you will, I would make this smaller. So clearly I would make this shorter, easier for travel. I would add a switch that goes back and forth. And, you know, those would be the basics that I would start with. And then you can go from there. So the question is, you know, what one thing, ideally one thing, maybe two, but what one thing can you beat the market at? So when you say, I'll re-describe what the gentleman stated. He writes, do you have any recommendations for what route to take for creating a website that is a one-stop shop for everything you want to sell. So that's the challenge. He said everything. Doing everything is generally quite expensive and difficult. So he says everything you want to sell, tangible and intangible, and is relatively simple to customize. So truth be told, I'm not entirely clear on what your actual question is. And that's important, number one, because when you're starting at the beginning, you need to have clarity on what you're doing, but you also need to be able to explain it to others very clearly because you want them to be able to help you, either work for you or contribute financially or something like that. So it has to be very clear. And also you always want to mention the revenue model, which is how does this thing make money? So.
And Sovel saying stood up, $49.99. Peace to the saints. I will definitely have to catch the repeat of this. Thanks for doing the Lord's works, big homie.
Sir, yes, sir. I appreciate it. Shout out to the real ones. So, for example, if I were you, I would say, hey, Marquette, I would like to create a website that allows you to sell, as you said, everything. So I guess sell anything. And the way we make money is every time someone makes a sale, we take 1% of the top line. Meaning of the total amount of money spent by the consumer. We take 1% of the, or 1%, we take 10% of that, whatever your fee is. Now, to me, this sounds like you're talking about Amazon. Are you talking about creating an Amazon competitor? Meaning that this would basically be Amazon.com. Is that what you're saying? It would be Amazon.com, but it allows people to also sell digital goods. Is that what you're saying? Please do feel free to clarify. And also, Amazon has a tremendous amount of money, number one. I think we all know that. So, you know, that makes them hard to compete with. Also, Amazon has Prime, which allows you to get your good within, you know, 1 to 2 days, which also makes them hard to compete with. They have extraordinary levels of, you know, technology and sophistication. So the question is, what can you beat Amazon at today? There's obviously some things that they're going to fall short on or not be good at. And as a business person, you have to ask yourself, what am I better at Amazon, better at than Amazon? Or what can I be better at than Amazon? Or what can I do differently than Amazon? So for example, one thing I like that you said tangible and intangible. I've never bought anything intangible on Amazon. Maybe they have it. I don't think they do. But even if they do, they don't market it very well. So what if you created the Amazon of intangible products? So anything you want to buy that's intangible, be it a piece of cryptocurrency, an NFT, a digital good such as a song, a piece of music, a piece of fill in the blank that is digital, an ebook, an audiobook, any of those things. So if that's the case, that would be maybe an interesting prospect to create an Amazon of intangible goods or an Amazon of digital goods. Maybe you're just selling them, or it's a marketplace where other people can come on and sell their intangible digital goods. That could be interesting. Now you then move away from maybe competing with Amazon directly to competing indirectly, which is an advantage to you. You also have other entities like Shopify that do allow the consumer to sell digital goods. So those are the things to consider. May I also acknowledge T, supporting the work via Cash App. Shout out to Ishmael. He writes, peace of saints, is there anything I can improve on to be a, okay, looks like he came right back, better choice for someone who needs a videographer? So you said someone. So if you're talking about me, obviously I have specific requirements. If you're talking about someone, I think it depends. You know, I would have to speculate on what someone wants. I know you said you kind of like maybe live in a more marginal place. So if that's the case, then, you know, generally videographers, people want on site. So you'd probably get more gigs if you lived closer to a larger city. That's number one. In terms of what I want quick, like high levels of urgency, tremendous levels of flexibility, and then I'm thrifty, so I want someone who's going to be mindful of my cost. Shout out to Vilken. He, sent him by Cash App. He writes, support the work. Was thinking of making a water filter product and affordable for college students. Or just any product targeting college students that's affordable. What do you think about this product idea, Saint? That, I'm glad you mentioned that, Vilken, because here's another very critical thing in business. Target audience. So, I see Dylan in the chat. He writes, you gave me an idea, Saint. Thank you. Bro, you actually have really good ideas. I remember you had that idea about the socks that I thought was like a really good idea, except it's like maybe easy to duplicate, but still a very good idea. And I love the way you were thinking about that. So I'll never forget that one. Anyways, Vilken writes, he wants to sell to college students. Well, I'm going to give the chat a moment to tell me why that's not a good idea. Why is it not a good idea to create a product designed around selling to college students? Give the chat some time to explain that. You see, I'm engaging the classroom. I want you to use your freaking brain. That's the problem. You guys don't use your brains enough. When I say you guys, I mean all of us. We go to sleep mode too damn often. Feel free to hurry up, by the way. Thank you. They're illiquid. They're illiquid. They don't have money. The worst thing to do is to go into a market where you're selling to a consumer that is illiquid or has to go through a long process to get approved, or where it's hard to figure out who's the boss or who holds the purse strings. So you're creating a product for college students, and historically college students don't have a lot of money. That's like saying, hey, Marquette, I want to create a product for homeless people. Could be the best product in the world. They just generally can't afford it. Or if you say, I want to create a product for crackheads. Well, unless the product is crack, they ain't buying it. And here's the thing. Crack sells really well. It's very easy to sell crack. Okay? It's a great product, a phenomenal product, because you have high rates of creating clients. You know, it's just not a one-time customer. They get hooked. They're a client. And the beautiful thing is that they have a high sense of urgency. They're going to get that money to pay for that crack. Crack is a great product to sell to a crackhead. But selling food to a crackhead, not as important to them. Low priority, and they don't have a lot of money. They have a lot of money when it comes to crack, which is to say when you can sell a product where the consumer has a high need for it, they will go get the money. But you have to ask yourself, would I rather sell a great product to someone with not that much money, or would I rather sell a great product to someone that has a lot of money? Well, I'd rather sell a great product to someone that has a lot of money. It makes it easier to close the deal. So I've done this before when I was young in business. I had a business that used to sell to nonprofits. Nonprofit, that's the name, that's a category that they're in. They don't have a lot of money, generally speaking, unless you're talking about the NFL or Teach for America. They don't have a lot of money. So that's a foolish group or entity to sell to. I used to be in the education industry. I had a business selling to schools. Terrible idea. Schools don't have a lot of money, and it's hard to get things approved. It takes a long time. I was still able to make that business successful. You might ask, how, Marquette, did you manage that? Well, I was very clever and I was very persistent. That's why I always tell you guys, when people send a super chat and they've never sent one before, I always say, you are doing something new. That's so important. You might think it's just a tactic on my end. No, I'm dead serious. I'm very sincere in that, because the way I figured out how to make a business successful selling to schools, and schools generally don't have money, is I looked at the higher education market and I kept trying to sell to many types of schools. Then I looked at the data and I figured something out. I said, oh, public schools, they take a long time to pay. And public schools keep saying they don't have money. But private schools, private universities, private colleges, they do have money and they pay quickly. Oh, and then in the early stage of my business, I noticed if the school's really big, things move slower. If the school's really small, I can meet the person who holds the purse strings. In a small school, if you meet the dean of fill-in-the-blank department, they're the dean and they also handle the money. It's the same person. You meet the dean in a big college, they're the dean of this academic department, but they don't have a direct budget that they manage or control. You got to meet the financial person. So it's a separate human. So in the early stage of my business, we hyper-targeted private schools that were small. Quick money in, because we needed money because we didn't have any. Then we get a lot of quick money in by scaling that. And then I said, okay, let's go for the big dollars. Now let's continue on with the private schools, but we'll go for the big ones. And they might say, hey, we're going to do this deal with you, but you know it'll take 7 months to pay you, or it'll take 9 months to just get through all the bureaucracy that we have to go through to do a deal this big and deploy your technology across 18 campuses that are in four different states. Okay, cool. We got time. We have what's called runway. So selling to the right customer is as critical as the product. Now, so much value here, by the way. Extraordinary value. So yeah, long story short, Vilken, don't sell to college students, Brody. They don't want to pay for anything. In fact, it's not just college students. People are generally price sensitive. They're generally trying to save money. They're generally trying to go with the cheapest option. And it's funny to me because I'm doing a lot more regular things than I've previously done in my life due to me reorganizing my personnel and hiring a remote assistant. So I've made a number of reorganized things, and I'm spending more time at my office than my home. And so I'm doing a lot of things I don't usually do, and it's giving me a greater sense of, prices, the world, certain experiences. And for example, I had set up an appointment for myself, right? And I called a particular institution. I said, hey, I want to do this, this, and this, and this, and this. I want everything that you got. And the person I was speaking to is a small business. I didn't realize at the time it was a small business. I called a big business first, and they're like, hey, we're fully booked. We're fully committed. I was like, okay. So then in that same business category, I called another institution, which I didn't realize was a small business. So I'm talking to the person who answered the phone, which I thought would be just the receptionist. And I said, hey, I want this, 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 this. And they're like, oh, okay. Well, you know what? That would be really expensive. So, you could just do some of those things, or you can like piece together things and, maybe you don't need all of that. And I said, no, I just told you, I want everything. They're like, okay, yeah, we'll come in, we'll talk about it, we'll give you the pricing. If you want everything, it'll be about this. And they said it like they were nervous about giving me the price. And then they said, come in, we'll talk about it. We just come in, I'm about to have lunch, so just come in before, and, we'll talk about it. So I come in, and I told them, hey, I need all of it. And the woman says, oh, well, that's going to be pretty expensive. Now, remember, I always remind you guys, cheap and expensive are relative terms. Some people find, for example, there's one internet influencer who drives a Bugatti, right? And so to him, a Bugatti is affordable. Might not be cheap, right? But it's affordable. To me, I find that to be expensive. Like, to me, a car, $1 million or whatever it costs, I don't even know what it costs. But I find that to be expensive. I'm assuming it's $1 million. But to me, that's expensive. Whereas to him, it's affordable. Conversely, like, I have a significant number of cars, and, one of my more expensive cars, $250,000, right? To me, that's affordable. To other people, that might be expensive. Like, maybe one of you guys drive a car that's like $40,000, $70,000, $80,000. To me, that's cheap. Like, if you have an $80,000 car, that's cheap. There have been weekends I've spent $80,000. No problem. That's cheap. So it's a relative term. Always remember that your whole life. It will carry you very far. Understand that. Now, here's the thing. So I'm talking to this person thinking that they're just the receptionist. And then by the time we're finished and we start having conversation, the person relaxes. She says, I run this business. And I was like, oh, okay. So you're the janitor, you're the receptionist, you're the this, you're that, you're everything. Okay, cool. And then I realized the way we were having that conversation when I called in, that was more of a sales conversation on her part. And because she's the boss, she's able to manipulate prices. She's also able to assess the customer. And I realized is she was interacting with me based on her typical experience with the customer, which is that if they say, hey, I want all of these things, then she knows once she gives them the price, they're going to have what's called sticker shock. Sticker shock. They're shocked at the price being so high. So she was adjusting around anticipating sticker shock, which was not the case for me. I just really, my true concern was not price. It was time, urgency. I want to get it done today because I have other things to do and I might be leaving the country soon. So I want to knock out certain things. So what she was selling to me was not the product. She was not selling the product to me. She was selling the speed of the product. The speed of the product was what I was really buying. You have to understand what you're selling. People sometimes don't understand what they're selling. Problematic. As the economy advances and becomes more complex, we're selling very peculiar things. Like if you buy a water bottle that has this label, or I actually only have my own water here right now, but if I pulled out a bottle of Fiji and then I pulled out a bottle of generic, you're buying status, you're buying association, you're buying certain things. I've tried all of the waters. There's really only one that I find the taste to be extraordinary, which is Pana water. And it, particularly when you get it in the glass, it tastes great when it comes out of the glass. So aside from Pana, all the waters mostly taste the same, but you'll spend an extra couple bucks on Fiji because of what it represents to you or to others. So you're selling status. You're selling hierarchy. You're selling, hey, I got money. I spent $8 on a bottle of water. I'm balling. I want to let you know. You have to understand what you're selling. It's a critical thing. And you also understand who you're selling it to. Some people would never buy Fiji because I think they're very conscious of the fact that it's just water. You're buying H2O no matter what. It's H2O. Huh? Go ahead, take a pause for the cause. Acknowledge some of the people supporting the work. Shout out to Charlie. I also acknowledge Ishmael. He writes, availability, communication, productivity. Availability. Yeah, and urgency. Urgency is very important. I think that I say urgency a lot. Shout out to Charlie. He writes, thanks for offering food for the mind. Yes, sir. And thank you for always supporting. Shout out to Ishmael. He writes, anything you noticed? Alignment. It's important to have alignment, and also in the midst of being urgent, you have to make sure that there's alignment and consistency, because if someone's ever unfamiliar with you, they're always waiting for a reason to pull out of a deal. This is one thing I learned during fundraising. And I don't mean fundraising like nonprofits, which is to say like you're begging for freaking money. I'm talking about fundraising at the high level in a corporation where you're like, look, this business is doing phenomenal.
Bill Jimmy stood up. $19.99. I joined a big corporation recently and I don't feel like the same guy I was when I was working at a smaller company in a bigger role. I need some words of inspiration / tough love from you, big homie.
Oh, Lil Jimmy. I think in Boss University I talk about this. So if you already have Boss University, go back through it. And everyone who has Boss University, I don't care if you're doing well or struggling, go back through it. Excuse me. There are so many gems there that will carry you forward. But let me tell you this in short, Lil Jimmy. Everyone's pretending. Everyone's faking. So you should never feel like you're inferior to anyone, or feel like they have an advantage over you. Everyone's faking. Maybe out of 100 people you see, maybe one might be real. Might be the real deal. So what I'm telling you is that Napoleon Bonaparte had a wife that cheated on him and used to talk and gossip about him and share his letters with her friends and embarrass him. He was also the Emperor of France. Very few people are what they appear to be. So it is the extraordinary man that knows all men are ordinary. So go forward like a fearless lunatic and win. And be thankful that you're in a bigger pond, you see. It's nothing to be the big dog in your small town. You know, go to New York, become the big dog. Go to China, become the big dog. That's what it's about. Make a go at life. And so you're in a good position. You're in the right place. Thank you for sharing that with everyone. Now, back to what I was talking about with Ishmael. So anyways, when you're putting together a deal, the other party is looking for any reason to pull out of the deal. Marquette, what are you talking about? So say you're raising millions of bucks for a Series A round of financing for your corporation. And it's not because you need the money. It's because you want the money. Here's the difference. You're raising a Series A. You want the money. You already got 10 stores open doing millions in revenue, but you want to open up 100 stores and you want to do it by the end of the year. So you need a couple million bucks. You already got a money machine. You know if you run a dollar through that money machine, it's going to return $1.26. You know, you give me a dollar, I turn into $1.26. I've done it a bunch of times. I got 10 stores. I want 100 stores. Give me a couple million. I'm going to make 100 stores. And for every dollar, I'm going to return to you $1.26. And I plan to do that within 5 years. Let's go. That is not that you need the money. You don't need the money. You want the money. And you know what to do with it. The investor is looking for any reason to pull out. Because you're a stranger. They don't know you. They never met you. They're going to, you know, invest in you. They're going to give you an opportunity. But they're looking for any reason to pull out. Anything that doesn't align. If they're talking to you today and you say $1.26 and then tomorrow you say $1.27, even though it's favorable to them, they're like, wait, why did that change? Why did that change? I was just talking to you and then the next day something changed. Why did that change? Or if they're talking to you today and you have, you know, one partner and then they're talking to you the next day and you have two partners, two additional partners, they're kind of like, whoa, hold on. Like, this is confusing. Like, I don't know if I can trust you. I don't know about your integrity. And you have to remember, the investor has an infinite number of people asking for money. When you have the investor has an infinite number of people that are saying, hey, I want to deal with you. The entrepreneur that's raising $1 million, there's not a lot of millionaires, multimillionaires that have millions to give. Right? So they have to go for a small pool of elite people. Whereas conversely, the small pool of elite people, that everyone wants money. Everyone's coming to them to get, you know, $1 million loan or $1 million, get collateralized. So understanding the importance of alignment, consistency, not giving the other party a reason to pull out and just having true levels of urgency. Like, you really got to want it, because when people are assessing you, especially in business, when they're seasoned, they're looking at the small things, things that you might not ever look at. And one thing I can tell you, and I often say, romance and business is the same. It is the same. You might often be thinking like, this guy's a nut. When you get there, you'll understand. Anytime I look at me dealing with a female and there's a breakdown, I cut it off straight away. If it's a breakdown early on, I cut it off. Why? Because in life, things rarely get better. They usually get worse. Marquette, what do you mean? When you meet the woman, she's 25. She's only going to get older from there. She's not going to get more beautiful. She's going to get less beautiful. You meet the woman at the beginning and she's not pleasant. Whoa, you're in for some trouble. Why? Well, she's not going to become more pleasant over time. She's going to become less pleasant. Life might have more challenges. She's going to get older. Her body's not going to work the same way. She's going to go through menopause. There's going to be different things that are going to add a weight. Things might stay the same, but rarely are they going to get better in terms of the quality of a person. So you have to know things are going to decline at some level. What do I mean? When you see someone on a job interview, that's their best self. That's the best version of them, because most people are fakers. Remember, I said everyone's pretending. You see them on the job interview, that's the best version. You see them, you know, 2 months later, they're still pretty good because they don't have security. Then you see them 3 years later, and they walk in late, they got a cocky attitude, they talk back to the boss. That's who they truly are. They're comfortable. They don't feel like they can get fired. And whether that's true or not, now you're starting to understand that, oh, things are not going to get better. They might stay the same, but they're rarely going to get better. They're usually going to get worse. And so if at the beginning of an engagement with a woman or at the beginning of a business deal, you see something's funny, you're like, oh, I'm out, because this is not going to get better. And you showed me what my possible exposure to risk may be, and I don't want it. I'd much rather deal with someone where they don't seem perfect, but I can estimate the risk that they're posing, and it's minimal and I'm comfortable with it, than look at one thing and say, oh, that didn't line up. Because here's one thing. And I've mentioned this before. I had a situation. I had someone working for me, and, you know, as a part of their job, they have to, you know, drive and do various things. And their insurance rate changed. Now, I'm paying their insurance because they drive on my behalf. Their insurance rate changed due to an accident they had, which I did not cause. The business did not cause. So when their insurance increased, they pass on that cost to me rather than paying the extra, you know, $50 or whatever it was per month. Maybe it was 15. I don't know. I don't care. Doesn't really matter. Could have been 2 pennies extra. I'm not paying an extra 2 pennies. I don't care what our relationship is. I don't care how long we go back. I don't care if your mom died. I don't care any of that. This is business. This is not personal. You see, You have to understand business and respect the spirituality and the laws of business, such that if you were working for me for 10 years and you asked for a $2 an hour raise and I couldn't justify it in the business, and I might love you to death, I will not give you a $2 raise. But on a personal level, like outside of business, on a personal level, I might turn around and give you a personal loan from Marquette Devon Burton. Like, here, man, here's $1,000. When you can get it back to me, get it back to me. Don't worry about it. It's a personal loan from me, the individual, to you, an individual I love and respect as a friend or as a family member. But I would not, as your boss, give you a $2 raise if I don't think you're worth it, or if you're not bringing an extra percentage of value to the corporation. I would not do it. And I don't care who you are. We don't play in business. It's not a game. There are no feelings. We're always trying to make profit. That is the only thing that matters. If you cannot lock into that, you don't really want to win. It's not for you. So many people don't want to win. I promise you that, you know, on the earlier live session where the young lady said, oh, Act goes and, you know, loses $80,000 in poker. I would never expect someone like Ack to be good at anything, really. He can't even manage his own weight. He doesn't have the intensity of a winner. I would never put money on him to do anything successfully. You can spot winners. They're serious people. And when they're in their game, you can tell that things are different. For example, there was a time Kobe was playing on the Olympic team. Paul Gasol, a Spanish player, was on the Lakers with Kobe. So during their regular professional season, they are teammates. And when they went to the Olympics, they're now playing to represent their country. And then Kobe, and you may have heard this story, Kobe told LeBron and some others, hey, first play of the game, I'm going to run straight through Paul Gasol's chest and run him over into the ground. And they're all like, bro, what? Like, it's not even that serious. You're wilding. First play of the game, boom, runs him over, lays him out. And then Paul's looking at Kobe like, bro, what the fuck? And everybody's looking at him like, whoa, he really did that. Why? Because it's about winning now. And now you're not on my team. You're on the other team, which means that you got to fall. If you don't have that kind of intensity, you're not ready to win. That's one reason I say, if you went through Boss University, go back through it. Keep that intensity there. Another thing I want to remind you guys, especially with the red pill, people are like, oh, they're RP. RP is nonsense. You're never going to be sharp unless you're around men who are sharp and are constantly hustling and they're going through challenges and you're overhearing what their solution was and what their folly was. That's what's going to make you perform. You got to have those reminders. Shout out to Kyle with a baller alert. He writes, supporting the work, killing it out here. I appreciate that. I also acknowledge Tia with a baller alert as well. She writes, for your stamina, peace of the saints. You don't know nothing about my stamina. I really got, though, low key. Quit playing with me. Shout out to Ishmael. He writes, what could I do at this moment to show my urgency? I think it's, you know, look for different opportunities. Another thing I want to remind you guys in business is that, and I say this as well in life, which is that no one person and no one moment matters that much. And just add on no one opportunity. The worst thing you can do is, you know, pin your hopes on one thing, one person, one opportunity. Because you will be disappointed, I promise you. You will be disappointed. There's just no doubt about it. And I remember when I was running a corporation that was in the B2B space, we always had to have like 10 sales like that were almost about to close at the same time. So we had to keep that funnel full. And here's the funny part. You got 10 deals that are all about to close. Only two or three ever close, right? You start with 100. You push them through. By the time you get to that part where they're about to close, they're about to sign and pay, maybe five of them sign, maybe only three of them pay. That's life. That's business. You started with 100. You ended up getting three into the net. Five signed the contract. They signed a damn contract. They agreed to pay. Only three paid. That's life. Now, you'd be a fool if you were in a situation wherein you pinned your business's hopes and the lifeblood of your business, which is money, on one deal. No, you have to have many deals, many options, many prospects. That's what it's about. Shout out to Numinous Propensity, whom I believe holds the record for Super Chats, by the way. I believe it was $1,111. That is the record currently. He actually took down a long-standing record that was $700 before that, and that was John Easton. Shout out to, I love, these are the kind of things that I like, because when I'm going into anything, I'm always asking myself, who's the best? Who's the greatest? And I want to destroy them. I want to beat them, or I want to learn from them and then destroy them and beat them. Like earlier, you would have, and this is the mind of a winner, a true winner, which is a competitor. You have to be a competitor if you're going to be a winner. Earlier, someone said, hey, Sean Strickland for president, Marquette, you can be the secretary of this or the vice president. Whoa, whoa, bro, knock it the fuck off. I'm the big dog. Nothing else is acceptable. Don't you ever fucking put me under anyone, especially not a Sean Strickland. Get the fuck out of here. Now, if it comes to MMA, yeah, he'd probably win, but I don't do MMA. I stay in my lane, but in my lane, I win. I only get in my lane because I can win at it, okay? Don't ever put me under anything. I'm not comfortable like that. That's not good for me. I'm the number one guy. I'm not the two guy. I'm not the three guy. I'm not the fucking four guy, okay? I don't play games. I can't be the number one. That's what you got to be on, okay? Don't you ever let anybody put you less than the one guy. Go into the game you can win at. Don't let these people out here bullshit you. They will. If they can put you at 2, 3, 4, 5, they will. If they can put you at the bottom, they will. If they can keep you starving, they will. If they can cheat you, they will. That's the real world that we live in. Anyone telling you different is a fucking idiot or a liar. They're either actually dumb, which is common, or they're a liar on purpose. Yeah, people will tell you lies so you can't compete with them. That's the truth. Homie said you could be under Sean Strickland. Give me a break, Brody. Give me a break. Anyways, and that wasn't even him being disrespectful. I think he thought that was a compliment. To me, that's not a compliment. No, that's not a compliment to me. Anyway, shout out to Numinous Propensity. He writes, a few low-budget films you may gain enjoyment from. Memento Crash, Once We Were Warriors, Days of Wine, and Roses, Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang. Okay, interesting. I'm going to go ahead and screenshot this. Ask me in about a month what I thought. Shout out to Esteban. Good to see you, Saint. He writes, learn more from you than all my years in school. Yeah, bro. Because what people don't realize, and you know, shout out to teachers. They're lovely people. They really are saints. But the truth of the matter is, generally speaking, teachers are not the like masters of whatever that discipline is. Like, for example, if you're a mathematics teacher, you probably are a lot better at math than the student, for sure. But if you were the best at math, you'd never become a math teacher. You'd probably go into currency speculating, or you'd go into investment banking and make a shit ton more money, right? So like, why would you go and become a high school math teacher or even a college professor in mathematics when you can become an investment banker and make $100 million? Like, why the fuck would you do that? So we think our teachers are like phenomenal, which they're kind people. They're saintly in nature, but they're not the best. You know, like if you were the best at fill in the blank, you'd go and make the big bucks. That's just human nature. There's no gorgeous woman that's like, look, I'm going to be with this guy who's broke and ugly. Like, God damn, he got to have something, right? Like if you're a gorgeous woman, you're like, you ain't going to be broke and ugly. You might be broke, but you're going to be good looking. Or you might be ugly, but you're going to be balling. But they're not going to take an L on both cases, right? That's just not how human beings operate. So generally when you're dealing with the teacher, you're dealing with the person who is not, you know, that they're not one who displays excellence in that given discipline. Shout out to Jose, supporting the work. Appreciate you. May I also acknowledge Jonathan. He writes, finance topics are my favorite. Peace of saints. Indeed, my favorite as well. Shout out to Michael. He writes, tuition, alignment, consistency, successful habits. Yes. And being around the right people, being around intelligent people is like reading books. And people tend to like act like reading books is, it's like, it's weird. They assign weird things. So when it's not about the practice of reading a book, it's about the knowledge. So if you can find the knowledge in a quicker way, you know, feel free. If you can find a way to make the knowledge stick to your ribs, feel free. It's just that most times you can't talk to Benjamin Franklin, but you can read his book. So that's where reading becomes, you know, more important. Saints, I'll give you some time to send in your comments, questions as we wind down. Well, shout out to Matthew. He sends in his question. He writes, can you please review and offer advice on my resume, which I've attached to this email? I've primarily been reaching out to hiring managers via LinkedIn, and I want to begin submitting my formal resume, although I'm unsure of what to add to it. So one, I've had the privilege of meeting you in person, so I think you have a great look for getting hired. So in terms of like actual appearance, I think that's very much so in your favor. I think that I'm sure you put on a proper button up and necktie and, you know, look the part. So that's good. And I actually am not one who's ever really reviewed a significant number of resumes except for my personal assistants, because it's a very personal role. I want to recommend that you do this, and I'm going to do you a favor. And I do think we can get this done for you. Send this resume to support@marquettism.com and say, hey, Marquette said he would do me a favor and get you to look at this resume because you are an expert at this. Would you mind looking at it? Okay, CC me on that one and then follow up with me in 2 days if you don't hear anything back, because that person is actually an expert at this and you want to go to the person who's really good at it. But I'll look at this briefly real quick. One, my initial instinct is that it looks a bit short. Now, I realize you're a young man, so it's always going to be short when you're young. But I'm going to just take a quick eyeball over this. Okay, so summary. Talented chief operations officer, accomplished in generating substantial profitability. And okay, so this stuff seems a bit general. Anytime you can include specific metrics, especially when you're talking about profitability, like maybe you might include sales, or I increased sales by this percentage, or I drove month over month, you know, revenue. Those kinds of things are more either A, believable, or B, persuasive. He writes, successful at cultivating a results-driven culture. And okay, so when I contrast the titles to your age, I think, you know, how is that possible that this man was a chief anything, chief operations officer, chief financial officer, chief fill in the blank? Okay, cool. So, you know, that's going to be questioned initially, but I think you can work this out. And we really want to look at what the specific job titles are that you're applying to. But yeah, we can make sure you got something good. And also whatever university you might be currently associated with, definitely there's a career center, and for sure send it over to them and also ask what connections they have, because they should have some connections theoretically. Thank you for your question. Shout out to Hugo. He writes, thank you for the education. I'm 19 years old in college studying electrical engineering. That's a good discipline. Since I was in high school, I've been struggling to be happy and enjoy life. Oh, that's not good. Do you think that what is needed is a change of perspective or a radical change? Well, probably a... So here's a challenge. When you institute a radical change, having consistency with the new thing is the hard part. So I think radical change is phenomenal, but pick one, right? One thing. Change the one thing. So you have to go through and ask yourself, what is the one thing that's going to give me a bigger outcome? I'll give you an example for me. People might think that I buy a Rolls Royce or buy a Maybach to have like a big name car. But here's the truth of why I buy those particular cars. This is the truth. The truth is, for so many years, especially when I was on my come up, I would go into the office and work, you know, like 13 hours straight indoors. And it's just like I didn't get any sunlight. I didn't get any fresh air. I didn't get any level of interaction. I didn't really get to see other people unless it was like the people working under me or working with me, depending at the age. And the reason that I get the Rolls Royce or the Maybach is because they have the tray tables that can fold out and you can do work on the tray tables. And in the case of the Maybach, there's actually, it has Wi-Fi like Starbucks, right? So your car itself has a Wi-Fi hotspot. So now I can just pull up my car to fill in the blank place, get fresh air, you know, open the panoramic roof, sunlight, fresh air, fold out the table, which is like a full workspace. It's actually two tables right on both sides. And I can work from the back of my car comfortably. And it has like a, you can, it has a proper outlet, you know, that you can use to plug in your computer. So That's actually why I favor those cars, because the rear seat experience, I can actually work from back there, you know, park next to a, you know, recreational park, or, you know, in a Starbucks lot, or, you know, wherever I want to be that's beautiful and has fresh air and cool people walking around. And even though I'm not like necessarily playing at the park or, you know, walking along the strip, like I'm still there and I can feel all of that life around me while I'm working. So why do I bring that up? Because that is a small thing. I mean, obviously it's not a small thing to buy $250,000 car, but it's a small thing that gives me a huge return. The small, relocating outside of my office, outside of a high rise, outside of an office building, and just being out in the world while still doing my work, I can work a higher number of hours. You know, I feel happier while I'm working in that environment. So that small thing gave me such a big return, and that big return impacts other things, level of happiness, level of feeling relaxation, ironically, even though you're sitting in a car, the likelihood that I'm going to want to work out happily because I'm already outside, like, you know, get back outside. Yes. So when you ask yourself, well, what are the small things that I can change that's going to give me a big return? That's the one thing you want to pick for radical change, and then ask yourself, how can I make this easy to do to stay consistent at it? That's what you really want to focus on. Thank you for that question. He writes, like you state in Boston University, right? So yes, Boston University, it sounds like perhaps, or maybe he's just talking about what I've said about Boston University. And I got to stop making promises and doing favors. I'm going to... I'm already limited on time. I forget, but we're going to get that done for you, Matthew. Absolutely. So email support@marquettism.com. We'll take care of you. Okay. I also got an urgent message. If you guys would allow me a second, I'm making a custom table, and you know, curiously the table maker, they actually want my input on all of the small details. So let me just take a look at what they're saying. Okay, cool. I think I'm caught up there. Great. Fantastic. And that's another thing that I did, because I think it'll have a big impact for me, is I'm putting a dining table into SASN headquarters so I can host some more meals. Although I've actually been thinking about it, I was like, okay, maybe we should actually go out to meals, places where there's a lot of foot traffic. We can engage socially with other people, but who knows? Anyways, you know, you got to think through these things. And let me give you some good advice, actually. You'd be very powerful if you could think through your ideas, but also project yourself into the idea. So it'll help you figure out, like, is this the right move? So for example, when I'm saying, okay, I'm going to buy, I like spent a bunch of money, got a custom table, which I actually haven't even picked out chairs yet. But anyways, I got this nice table that I'm going to put in SASN headquarters. But first I should have projected myself into sitting at that table and projected in all the people I would want around that table and what the experience is. How do we feel? How often do we want to be there? Why are we there? Is there an event? How often are we going to be there? Is it once a week, once a month? If you can project yourself very vividly into an experience, it will help you make good decisions. Consistently, people make very bad decisions. I kid you not, I observe on a regular basis people around me, particularly women, they make terrible spending decisions because they're not good at projecting themselves into a given experience. I can't tell you how many women are overweight and they're like, okay, well, I'm going to buy a Peloton bike and I'm going to buy, you know, this exercise thing and this exercise equipment, and none of it gets used. They haven't been realistic with themselves. Shout out to Jordan. Looks like he just became a member at thesasn.com. That's thesasn.com. Now, also acknowledge The Empire. He writes, can you explain finding your lane? Yes, in Boston University, we talk about this kind of thing, which is like asking yourself, well, what am I good at? And, you know, making a study of that. Well, that's your lane. So it's either what you are certain that you're good at, or more intelligently, what others have told you on a consistent basis that you're excellent at. Not people who are, you know, your mother, your father, your brother, or they're related to you, but people who don't know you from Adam, don't care anything about you, and they have consistently told you, like, hey, you do this. Like, you got it. I'll give you an example for myself. Two things that I know that, like, you know, I could probably make a dollar at that. Consistently, people always say, you're the best public speaker I've ever heard. You really know how to talk. You can captivate an audience. Okay, I can probably make a dollar at that.
I go out in this world like, oh, man, the drip is crazy consistently. Oh, man, where'd you get those shoes? Are insane. Oh, that suit. Oh, I could probably make a dollar at this, which is to say I could probably make a dollar running a fashion business. I have taste. I can make a dollar doing public speaking. I'm good at it per other people on a consistent basis. So if you are a listener, that will help you assess, you know, what you can apply your skill set to. Okay, shout out to Jay Vice. I was wondering where you went to. Wait, did you already? Let me see where we left off. Okay, he's back at it. Okay, very good. Awesome. Yeah, Jay Vice, let's get this done, bro. I think this can be an interesting product. I think it'd be cool. Okay, Andre, I got your email right here. And so what I want you to do is reply to me. Actually, I'm just going to do this for you right now. I'm going to CC support at markquetism.com for you. Great. Send that off. Great. So you should, if you don't hear back from support at markquetism.com within 24 hours, go ahead and follow up with them. They'll make sure that you're taken care of. Shout out to Hugo. He writes, I do have Boston University. I appreciate the advice. I will definitely start small or with the basics when seeking improvement, improving my life and mentality. Thank you, Mr. Burton. Absolutely. Okay. So that piece that he had asked me about, he did get from Boston University. That makes perfect sense. Very good. Excellent. A little piece over there, huh? We got a little piece over there. Okay, cool. So let's see where we're at. Okay, it looks like we are all caught up. Fantastic. Saints, I'll give you some time to send in your final comments, questions as we wind down. Shout out to Starboy5. It looks like he's trying to troll, but he's a touch too poor to troll. Starboy5, I will give you some advice because it's actually a great time to troll, really, because we have text-to-speech on. So if you come in at the $15 or higher level, it'll read out your super chat no matter what. So even if you're trolling or being insulting, it'll read it out for you. So if you scrape together $15 and you would like to ask, know, what's an NFT or can you create an NFT from the command line, it'll actually just read it out. So I advise you get together your $15 and then you can upgrade your trolling game. I mean, to me, that would be a gold mine for trolls, but it just strangely, consistently, we find that trolls are broke. It's just strange how that always works out like that. It's so strange. You know, and that's why I tell you guys, there's like a spirituality to business. There's a spirituality to money. Like you can assess some aspects of people's personality when they've earned their own money. And people who don't have any money, especially in a place like America in the West, you can also assess certain things about their character and like lapses or flaws or inconsistency and that they're able to stay in that position in a place called the land of opportunity. So anyways, you know, I invite Starboy to upgrade his troll game. And I think we all look forward to that entertainment. But until then, ladies and saints, let us end this with our tradition, the Creative Assassin. Repeat after me with full conviction, knowing this is true of you. The Creative Assassin. I am going to be who I truly am because I am remarkable. And I'm going to strive every moment to show the greatest part of who I am. Until next time, peace of the